This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sian Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
I am Anne Applebaum from the Legarten Institute, and I am interviewing Min Xin, who is a blogger and writer, most notably for Democracy Lab, which is a website that we run together with Foreign Policy Magazine in Washington. Min is in London on his way between California and Burma, where he spends time in both places. And I'm really delighted to have him here. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We were talking just now about the transition in Burma. And of course, it's been a very interesting change in Burma. As you've said yourself, it's a real change. People like yourself who were in the democracy movement have been allowed to go back. Aung San Suu Kyi has been allowed to become a politician, to be a member of parliament. But I think as the elections approach in November, many people are wondering whether it's going to be a real transition in the sense of, you know, will the Burmese military really give up actual power? Do you have any sense of that now? Can you talk a little bit about it?
I mean, the transition was originally, in 2010, 2011, was mainly the military hunter-driven transition.
Yes.
They were the one who managed the transition. So then, surprisingly, they took some significant steps to open up the country in terms of liberalization efforts. So it was significant. But in 2011, the most significant thing I would say was that Aung San Suu Kyi and the President Thein Sein, mm-hmm. they met and for the first time, and they reached agreement how to go forward the transition. So then that's why Aung San Suu Kyi ran for the by-elections, and then she became member of parliament. So it was pretty good. But now what we need is, as you said, we are going through the election in November. So we need to renew that understanding between government and opposition. So then that's how we are now standstill. We haven't seen any substantive progress on part of, you know, both sides to reach agreement, to reach understanding how to proceed post-election transition. Because if you don't have any understanding, then you have election, then the loser is most likely to be the incumbent, who will not likely to honor election outcome. So I think the most critical thing is whether both sides could reach agreement or like elite pact how to proceed transition, especially in post 2015 election. This will be critical. Otherwise, election will be trigger for social unrest or even military takeover.
Are there people in the democracy camp who are prepared for those possibilities? Is there a discussion of tactics? Is there some idea of what to do after the election? Are there people on the one hand who are ready to take power, on the other hand who are ready in case there's another military coup?
Honestly speaking, my personal observation is that the opposition is quite unprepared. I mean, basically opposition doesn't have plan B. They just focus too much on election, and their idea is to win every seat, and then they expect that will be their leverage to deal with the military. I think things are not that simple. Military can constitutionally resort to the coup, legally take over power. So they don't need any justification like Thailand or Egypt to take over power, because constitution allow them to take over power legally. So to me, opposition is strategically unprepared. And on the other hand, military, I think they have not just plan A, plan B, C, D. They have arrays of options. They expand arrays of options. So that's what I see the situation of both sides right now.
Mm-hmm. You spoke also about the role the military has played in creating and stoking ethnic conflict in Burma. Can you describe how that's happened and what role that will play in politics?
Well, I would say not necessarily military per se, because now you have executive, you have the ruling party. I mean, they have a disagreement, you know, between these elements. So it's hard to say military as a monolithic. But I would definitely say the ruling elite, especially executive side, involve or take advantage out of especially the religious instability in the country. So we have plenty of evidence to talk about this issue. But at the same time, with regard to ethnic minority issue, which I mean civil war in Burma, mm-hmm. it broke out since independence from British. So for that ethnic minority issue, I think military is not ready to respect ethnic equal rights, which mean the establishment of federal union. They may say rhetorically or on paper, we are going for federal union, but in reality, in actual negotiation process, what we see now is military is not much ready for the federal union that guarantee equal rights for the ethnic minority, especially when you deal with the civil war. Military is so much concerned with regard to demobilization, disarmament, and reintegration or DDR process of the ethnic minority armies too. So there's a lot of issues we have to get resolved, but the most fundamental issue is a principal issue. I think military is not ready to respect the federal union that's ethnic minority groups are like fighting for.
Mm-hmm. Because you also spoke about the deliberate creation of conflict, the attempt to use normal prejudice and make it into a kind of hate movement. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Which is to do with mainly religious discrimination against Muslim community, and especially a Muslim community in the western part of Burma, Rohingya Muslim. I think the ruling elite after 2012 by elections, which saw the NLD and Aung San Suu Kyi, the opposition party in Aung San Suu Kyi, won probably 43 out of 44 seats, which was basically quite thrilling. Then military and the ruling elite especially realized this is not a good sign. So they tried to create, or they tried to let it happen, that religious prejudice emerging and becoming dominant force in the society. So when we saw was that in the western part of Burma, it started out huge riots with the huge human casualties, and now spread into the proper Burma, and you see a lot of riots in different major cities. So my understanding is that the ruling elite, the ruling leadership, at least take advantage out of this, because this is the best way to counter against opposition movement led by Aung San Suu Kyi. And on part of Aung San Suu Kyi, I would probably say that she is responsible somehow too, because she failed to morally take stand against this extremism. So in the beginning, it was on the fringe, but now gaining momentum and escalating into the mainstream. So now it's hard to stop and control. If Suu Kyi should have done better job in terms of stopping, in terms of taking clear moral stand against this sort of extremism, I think it would be really, really chance. We can stop this movement, or we can weaken this movement. I don't see much national figure who taking moral stand except the Christian cardinal, who recently took clear stand against this sort of discrimination and hate speech.
Is the ruling elite trying to use this hate speech, trying to use this, this anger in order to win votes?
That's what I believe so. I think opposition is mainly focused on democracy, you dictator, that sort of, like good versus evil type polarization. And that was true, because military was a villain. They were the one who were brutal, to kill people, to torture people, to grab people property. So people had that, memory or hatred against the military. So opposition tend to use this, narrative. Then military use counter narrative, which is, we are the purity of Burman Buddhism. We need to protect our race, our religion, our language, our land. So it's more like extreme Burman Buddhist dominant narrative. So now we are seeing is a group focused too much on history, and the other group focused too much on biology. So we are now seeing, prior to the election, more like history versus biology dichotomy rather than policy debate or more visionary view forward their reconciliation and peace.
And what should they be talking about? I mean, I think if ordinary Burmese, you know, were to, what political debate would they like to hear? What's the missing policy debate that's not happening?
I mean, broadly speaking, like reconciliation and peace is the most important, right? But in the detail, I think people want to know more about accountability and transparency with regard to corruption, mismanagement, and the issue that impact their daily life, such as land grabbing.
And because there are no property rights, or our property rights aren't respected.
Very, very like blurry, shady property rights. So when you see in the whole country, the military and the business cronies are grabbing the land, and just use it for the military purpose or other business purposes. So unless you have that proper property rights issue get resolved, you can attract the foreign investment too, right? So I think this is one of the most important issues the stakeholders should discuss and try to figure out to draw international assistance, technical as well as other resource assistance to resolve this issue. I think that unless you can address this corruption, mismanagement, and then the fundamental property right issue, I don't think you can help growing economy. Then you can expect a sustainable political and economic transition.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.